There are many elements to cybersecurity, the subject of our focus in hour number two. One of the elements of cybersecurity that does not get a lot of attention is the supply chain. And someone thinking about that and talking about it and writing about it is the Senior Vice President of CACI's Cyber Solutions Group, Zal Azmi, the former Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Mr. Azmi joining me for the hour in the studio. And Zal, it's great to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Francis. Glad to be here.
There's a report out from CACI International talking about the global supply chain. It's titled Countering Challenges to the Global Supply Chain. Why the focus on this particular element of cybersecurity?
Well, Francis, as you know, the company has had a number of symposiums in this area, and the first three symposiums were on the asymmetric threats, but we started a new series this year, and the first one was on supply chain security, mainly because it's not getting a lot of attention, and we thought if we bring a group of folks together and actually tee up some ideas and points of discussion, we may raise the level of awareness for our audience and the nation as a whole. Mm-hmm. And that's why this report was published. I should say that the report is on our website. It's available for download. And the content of the report is also a summary of presenters' thought process and some recommendations in there that is all attributed to our presenters.
All right. We will have that linked up for you at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon.
So supply chain security, as you probably know, there are two things we worry about in cyberspace: the actors and the attack vectors. Mm-hmm. And supply chain is one of those attack vectors that we need to worry about, because the idea is that everything we deal with, if it's goods or information technology, we need to ensure its security from end to end. So if you're looking at a technology supply chain, then we're looking at the design of a chip, to manufacturing, to transport, to installation, to operation and maintenance. At any given time, this computer equipment or this chip or the software is open to intrusions. So mm-hmm. we must provide a end-to-end security for it. And how do we do that? And that's the whole framework that we have developed, and that was part of our discussion in the symposium.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that enough attention has not been paid to this? Because I'm just as guilty as the next person. I've had any number of discussions about cybersecurity on this radio station, and this is not an element of it that I've covered before.
Well, now that takes us to the actor part of this. As you probably know, if you're looking at the actors in cyberspace, an individual who wants to conduct a malicious act, maybe his or her activities will be very confined because they don't have a lot of resources. You're self-motivated, financial gains, and if they fail, they go about and do something else, and very seldom they actually escalate their processes. Mm-hmm. However, if you look at a nation or state-sponsored attack, then they have the resources, the capabilities, the time, the people, the money to actually escalate whenever one of the intrusion fails. Mm-hmm. And our concern is that with most of our equipment being manufactured overseas, there's a good possibility that some of these chips may be counterfeit. Mm-hmm. And we need to figure out exactly to determine those and make sure that they don't get into our sensitive or confidential environment. Mm-hmm. So since the threat is at the highest level, we usually overlook it, because everything we have dealt with so far has been come through what I call the remote access, the internet attacks. Mm-hmm. You know, computers been compromised, malware has been downloaded, information has been stolen, and has not been as much as a supply chain. We have had probably about a dozen of these incidents in the last 2 years or so that has been publicized, mm-hmm. where counterfeit chips were actually installed in boxes, or software was installed in government facilities that had malware and software that were doing malicious things. So mm-hmm. we did not pay attention to it as much. But now we know that everything we do is interconnected through the internet.
Yeah.
And most of our supplies are coming from overseas. You know, we're not confined to the United States anymore. We have across the world supply chains that brings goods back and forth. So mm-hmm. it is important to pay attention to that. And I'm focusing now purely on technology, but the same is true for medical supplies. Mm-hmm. Same is true for supplies that we send to our troops in combat zone. You know, mm-hmm. they can be easily redirected to a different location. you know, say it's ammo or fuel or something like that, somebody gets into the supply chain and sort of sending the equipment to location A, they're going to redirect it to location B. Mm-hmm. So the vulnerabilities are tremendous.
You know what I think this issue became the most most obvious to people is after the Olympics in China, when people came back from China and were flabbergasted at what counterfeit goods you could buy easily in open environments in that country. And it's not just China, it's other countries around the world where you can go and find the most unusual, offbeat, esoteric things that are available and look and function exactly like the original thing. I think people are startled to know what's available, what fakes are available, and how good they are, how much they look and operate like the real thing.
I mean, they are very authentic, and that shows a level of sophistication of our adversaries, that they can counterfeit our technology with very little, dissimilarities with what we are trying to do. Mm-hmm. I think the key in here is the speech that Undersecretary Lin gave about thumb drive that mm-hmm. was put in DoD. That in itself, because a lot of times we go to these conferences and they're giving away one or two gig thumb drives. We really don't know where they were manufactured, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of security is on it, and we're all happy and we get a two gig thumb drive. We come to computer and plug it in and say, hey, we're going to download some information. Uh-huh. But we don't know what we are uploading into our network.
Yeah.
You know, we got to be very careful about that.
Why do you think those kinds of things continue to happen? When that incident happened, I just did one of these, you know, forehead poundings, because it strikes me as hard to believe that in 2010, or I guess he said this incident happened in 2008, that somebody would think this was still okay to just randomly plug a thumb drive into the DoD network. That just, to me, that seems ridiculous to think of.
I will tell you one thing, Francis. When you're dealing with a network as large as the DoD, 15,000 networks, almost 7 million devices out there, it is very, very difficult to maintain a constant level of awareness on what is on your network.
Mm-hmm.
It takes resources, it takes technology, and it takes persistence to do this. And a lot of time, the pressure of work or a misconfigured computer will allow you to actually connect a device that shouldn't be on your network.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just don't think about it twice. I mean, when we talk about continuous monitoring and we're talking about the training of our workforce, I mean, these are basic hygiene activities. You do not plug a device to your network directly when you bring it from outside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's...
Yeah, that's no-brainer stuff.
That's no-brainer. But sometimes operators just don't think.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't think, and they think it's okay. And the unfortunate part of it is that sometimes they think, I'll do it only one time. Well, guess what?
Yeah. That's only one. Took one time. That's right. There are some recommendations in this report for talking or for securing the supply chain, and there are a lot of details about how difficult it will be to do so. But this report says during the last 25 years, globalization has increasingly compromised U.S. supply chain immunity, and you talked about that. Are we even able to ascertain where a lot of these materials are coming from, not just the country that they're coming from, but even maybe down to specific facilities in those countries, to be able to nail them down? Or do we have to maybe put up a kind of a firewall around the hardware the same way we try to put a firewall up around the network?
It is going to be very difficult. At this point, I think we probably have a good idea where these devices are coming from. We also know that there's a requirement on the federal government side that when we buy some of these devices, they must be manufactured within the United States. So there's a large number of companies that have dual plans for manufacturing chips in hardware. One, for example, in Taiwan for their customers in Europe, and one in the United States for their customers within the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some risk mitigation strategies or steps in place. But ultimately, we have to have a framework around the supply chain itself. I mean, CNCI, Comprehensive National Cyber Initiative, Initiative 11, was specifically for supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to worry about that, and we need to mature and implement that framework. I would say probably the maturest framework for a supply chain right now is around medications.
Mm-hmm.
medical supply chain. But we need to sort of adopt something from that concept and implement it for information technology and for other goods.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be work in progress. We have to work with the private sector. We have to work with the manufacturing plants. We have to work with our international partners. That is very, very important.
I want to talk some more about that when we come back from the break. My guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM is Zal Azmi, the former CIO at the FBI and now Senior Vice President of CACI's Cyber Solutions Group, on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The supply chain is integral to cybersecurity, and drawing that connection for me today is the Senior Vice President of CACI's Cyber Solutions Group, Zal Azmi, former FBI CIO. And Zal, before the break, we were talking about supply chain integrity, and you mentioned that right now the most advanced type of supply chain when it comes to this, the integrity that's needed in cybersecurity, is the medical supplies supply chain. Can we take best practices from that and graft them right onto our cybersecurity supply chain issues, or do we need to just apply some of the principles but rethink them and reshape them for some of the IT challenges that we have in supply chain?
Francis, you probably could do a little bit of both, because as you know, the supply chain, as I mentioned, from design to manufacture to transport to install and to operation and maintenance, goes through different phases.
Mm-hmm.
So where there may be some areas that we can borrow the concept and the framework, how it was done without the implementation of technology, but there may be parts that we could use the technology. For example, the transport of a medical supply versus transport of technology, mm-hmm. goods, maybe the same. Maybe we will need some RFID tagging capabilities or continuous monitoring of the location or a GPS implementation of the technology to make sure at any given time we know where this device is and who touches it and who's modifying it.
Mm-hmm.
So some of both area can apply.
Mm-hmm.
More optimistic on the framework itself, because if we take the framework and the concept on how to secure a supply chain end to end, then we can figure out what kind of technologies we need for what kind of supplies.
Mm-hmm. There are four recommendations in this report, and what we've been discussing fits, I think, well with the second recommendation to make supply chain security part of the establishment of an overall cyber intelligence capability. Let's talk about the first one, though, because this is about as broad as you get when it comes to cybersecurity, and that is to ensure the nation's prepared to react to and preempt cyber attacks. Now, I understand that different agencies have different are at different places when it comes to that. Some are more capable than others. But overall, and also understanding cybersecurity is a constantly moving target. You could be secure one day and not secure the next day and then secure again the third day. But how are we doing overall? If this were a baseball game, are we in the second inning, the ninth inning, almost there? How do we, or maybe there's not even a way to gauge it because it changes so much.
And you're correct. I would say we are on the right path.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so when I'm looking at my personal view of cyberspace is a never-ending space,
uh-huh.
constantly changing, constantly modifying itself. I mean, when I arrived here, I had only 10 emails that I needed to respond to. When I walk out of here, I probably have 20 or 30.
Right.
So that's how quickly your environment changes. So the key in here is how we're going to respond to cyber attacks is our ability to have adequate intelligence on the threat itself.
Mm-hmm.
I equate that process to our intelligence cycle. We should be able to collect intelligence on cyber attacks, on bad elements that actually operate in that space. We need to know who these people are, what kind of code they write, what are their intentions. Is it personal gain, criminal activities, or their criminal enterprises, or their nation state sponsored? We need to have that kind of intelligence. And the last part of this is actually we need to be able to share that information.
Mm-hmm.
That information sharing comes back. I mean, we've been talking about it since 9/11.
Yeah.
If it was about intelligence, now we're talking about the threats. We really need to share this information, because if we find out about an attack, we're not the only target. It could be any one of the other sister agencies, mm-hmm. any other sectors. You know, an attack on a power grid could be an attack on nuclear plants.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no different, and we need to be able to share that information. And I know we've been struggling with this, and people are very unwilling to share their data.
Mm-hmm.
I collected it; it's mine, and I will act on it. And mm-hmm. we still have those. I won't call it turf wars, but protecting our own environment. And my view of it is, somewhere along the way, we need to come up with a model that if we cannot share the entire threat matrix, we can at least share elements of that that is common to mm-hmm. all environments. We need to see a lot more of that. I was encouraged to see that most of the computer emergency response centers are connected to each other now, which is good. At least they are sharing information among each other.
Yeah.
Now, the next step is how we're going to get that information out to the operators and the users to make mm-hmm. sure they know what's going on in that space.
I'm glad you avoided the term turf wars, because I think that term is used as a pejorative, and I'm not sure how fair it is. I think nobody disagrees, I think, that this information needs to be shared. But in the course of, as you cited, 9/11, that's about 9 years, we're asking people who have done this for their entire careers to completely turn their thinking around 180 degrees and approach the way they do their jobs completely differently and just get with the program starting 5 minutes ago. And I'm not sure that's completely fair to them. At the same time, we all agree that it is what needs to be done.
You know, there's need for compromise.
Mm-hmm.
I will mention one of the FBI's program that I'm personally very proud of. It's called the National Data Exchange Program. And the National Data Exchange Program is based on sharing information among 50 states and the federal government. This initiative actually took 3 years to complete. But as soon as the system became operational, we had almost 5,000 to 10,000 users instantaneously on that platform. And the genesis of that was that we're going to share all information. At the end, the 50 states and the federal government, Department of Justice and FBI being the primary catalyst for it, agreed that they're going to share about 200 to 240 data elements.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not going to share their entire database, but they're going to share those data elements. And today, that is a very successful program. So when you stop a car, you search index to see if the license plate is in there and who it belongs to and all of that stuff. And it gives you an idea what kind of vehicle or driver you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So if we learn something from that experience, and this is only one example, I can cite multiple examples. If we learn something from that, I think it gives an idea that, okay, all of the threat centers are receiving all of this information, you know, 100 data elements. Maybe we cannot share all of 100 data elements, but we can share 30.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with 30.
Yeah, start somewhere at least and get the process going.
Start somewhere.
That's right. Sal Azmi, former Chief Information Officer at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and now with CACI International, their Senior Vice President of Cyber Solutions. And we're back for more on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, keeping the supply chain clean when it comes to cybersecurity. More recommendations, and we'll cover those in just a moment. Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Sal Azmi of CACI, and we're talking about supply chain hygiene. You didn't necessarily know you were coming in to talk about hygiene today, did you, Sal?
No, I didn't.
I always get a laugh out of that term being applied to cybersecurity, too, and it's being used more and more, so I guess I should get used to it. But it always gives me kind of one of those fifth-grade giggles when I think about cybersecurity hygiene. But at any rate, we were talking about some of the recommendations in this report that CACI has. And the third one is to develop the ability to build a limited number of computer and communication systems that are absolutely certain to be secure. And the reason that I talk about hygiene is because I can see, I can conceive such a system or systems being built, and I can conceive that it would be easy to certify them when you turn them on. The issue is the second day and the third day, and as they continue to be used, keeping them clean so that you can continue to certify that these limited systems are definitely secure.
Yeah, that's going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea behind building secure systems for command and control in case a disaster happens is very similar to the secure bunkers we have for our senior officials in the government, that mm-hmm. if something catastrophic happens, everybody knows where to go and where they're going to operate from. And this is akin to that one. So once you get to the bunker, what system you're going to use to operate?
Right.
So these systems, or the recommendation was that these systems be used for critical and purely for command and control in a case of disaster. So we imagine that they will be running on a network of their own mm-hmm. That is going to be a private network or a private cloud that is going to operate separate from the your traditional open internet.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we envision that with appropriate security in place, because again, it's for critical infrastructure, it is command and control, that it will have adequate securities from point to point,
mm-hmm.
And with encryptions and additional devices in place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost akin to your top secret network that we have in DoD today,
uh-huh.
that the intrusion into them would be very unlikely in case of a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, over time, anything is open to intrusions.
Yeah.
So it has to be continuously monitored. It has to be continuously secured. And that's where we talk about situational awareness. You have to know at any given time when a node is compromised.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's compromised, you want to isolate it from the rest of the network and reroute your traffic through those points that you know they are secure.
Yeah. Is determining which operations are critical and which ones aren't a black and white matter, or is there a lot of gray there that's going to have to be negotiated?
It's probably a lot of gray in that area. I mean, this is a decision that is being made by the highest level in the government,
mm-hmm.
what constitutes command and control in terms of Department of Defense, in terms of operating Homeland Security, Homeland Defense. So I'm sure there's a list somewhere that categorizes what constitutes command and control
mm-hmm.
in critical assets. For example, we know the power grid is going to fall in that category.
Right.
Without power, we have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there will be areas that fall in there. Gray category.
Because I wonder, for example, maybe in some circumstances, the USDA's network might be considered critical if it's a challenge, or if there's some kind of potential compromise to food safety or that. So is it possible that those critical things could change over time or from instance to instance? Or, I mean, this has the potential to be very, very fluid.
Very much. I mean, that's the whole difference between our physical world and our digital world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in physical world, you sort of have a start and end point. In the digital world, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you start an attack in a physical world, you start from point A and it's going to end up in point B somewhere.
Right.
In physical world, you really don't know what that point B is and where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to what you said, Francis, a system or a network or a set of digital resources that we don't consider critical today, it may become critical depending on the intruder, attack vector, and their intentions.
Mm-hmm.
What are they trying to do? Are they trying to poison our water supply?
Yeah. Recommendation number four here, Zal, is to carry out a sustained strategic communications campaign to provide the public with a realistic appreciation of the cyber threat. I imagine that most people, for example, I'm the chief information officer of the Rose household, and my primary cyber challenge is keeping botnets off of our computers and keeping all kinds of spam and junk like that. I think that's probably what the average person walking around thinks of when they think of cybersecurity, is how do I make sure I don't get stuff on my computer that shouldn't be there, but not necessarily thinking about it from a national security
Correct.
Perspective. What do you think would be an effective way to do that in keeping with this fourth recommendation, to get people to understand that this isn't just a matter of not getting spam you don't want, that this is a national security issue?
I think this level of awareness and communication needs to start in elementary school
mm-hmm.
because I like to say that everybody is armed today, mm-hmm. because everyone you see has a cell phone,
uh-huh.
and a cell phone has a IP address.
Yep.
And every device with an IP address is a point of entry or intrusion into our network, because mm-hmm. we are so communicated, well connected, mm-hmm. and we communicate so well to each other. So therefore, we need to start this education as early as possible. Teach our children what that cell phone really means. And you probably know that we have laws around carrying guns. Sooner or later, we will have to worry about the software that we load on these devices, or the software that our kids can download to these devices.
Mm-hmm.
We, like you said, you're going to be in charge of those botnets to
yeah.
make sure they are not downloaded to the cell phones.
That's right.
And we have to worry about that, because it's not about grown-ups now. It's about the entire population of this of the world who has a digital device attached to their hip.
Mm-hmm.
We got to worry about it.
It's it is a daunting thing to think. I mean, my son is 10. And I swore when he was much younger that he would never get a cell phone until much later in life. He's got one now, and it's almost, it would be hard for me to imagine now him not having one, just for the convenience and ease of my wife and I be able to keep in contact with him just when he's, you know, yeah. up the block or whatever. And at the same time, you're exactly right. He has all kinds of apps and stuff on it, and it's amazing the level of sophistication that can be packed into something. And it's not a smartphone. It's just a plain old phone. And yet the capability there is really incredible, and so is the potential for intrusion. My guest is Zal Azmi on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. He is the Senior Vice President of CACI's Cyber Solutions Group. We're talking about cybersecurity, securing the supply chain. This report is called Countering Challenges to the Global Supply Chain. You can find it linked up later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. More with Zal in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Zal Azmi of CACI, talking about their report, Countering Challenges to the Global Supply Chain. And let's recap these recommendations, Zal. Number one, ensure the nation's prepared to react to and preempt cyber attacks. Number two, make supply chain security part of the establishment of an overall cyber intelligence capability. Develop the ability to build a limited number of computer and communication systems that are absolutely certain to be secure, and number four is to carry out a sustained strategic communications campaign to provide the public with a realistic appreciation of the cyber threat. If you were going to prioritize these, if you were in charge of this, and you had to move on one first, which one would you go with first?
I'll probably start with number four.
Really?
Yes, because it's the quickest, it is the fastest, it's easiest to implement with a huge return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to inform the nation of the challenges that we have with cybersecurity, mm-hmm. and prevent some of the basic, you know, intrusion into our systems.
Yeah. After that, I'm going to guess number one.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So we're thinking alike. That's either encouraging for me or discouraging for you. I'm not sure which. This report is very incisive, and it's available later this afternoon, linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. In the time that we have left, I'd like to talk about a couple of other issues that are important to the people who do the job now that you used to do at the FBI, and that is to lead the IT efforts at some of these agencies. Melissa Hathaway was here a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about some legislation that is coming along on Capitol Hill that will change the way that CIOs and CISOs do their jobs and the way that they're viewed in their agencies. She said that continuous performance monitoring is going to become prevalent. We're seeing that already to a degree with the dashboards, where your former colleagues' names and faces are on these dashboards right next to the level of performance of some of these programs. Some of these bills talked about the supply chain too, as we have this hour. But she's predicting an elevation of the CIO and the CISO to more of a policymaking function at agencies rather than just being the leader of the IT shop. Obviously, agencies are dependent on their IT systems running well, and the leaders of the agencies are starting to incorporate that. Well, I'm going to guess that that's a development that you're probably that you probably think is a good one.
Absolutely. Actually, the intent of Klinger-Cohn Act establishing the Office of the CIO was to make that individual the head of sort of information, you know, all of the information the organization has, and elevate the position to report directly to the head of the agency.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, many organizations did not follow that recommendation, and most of the organization that did, they immediately took advantage of the position of the CIO in terms of understanding, because this individual knows everything about your data in the organization,
mm-hmm.
and what does make an organization flow properly, information. So I think Melissa is absolutely right that the elevating these positions to a higher level within the organization will provide some positive outcomes. I would also say that your CIOs shouldn't be mainly your network guys or hit techie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the network is down, let's call the CIO.
Right.
If computers are not running, let's call the CIO. Because your CIO is also a mission person.
Mm-hmm.
If he or she is well integrated within the mission space of an organization, he or she can really, really help an organization to carry out their mission successfully.
Yeah.
Because their knowledge of information technology and computer assets within the organization will help them to visualize and articulate a good solution to a mission outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very, very important. And I'm glad that there are bills out there that is going to make this finally happen. It is very, very important. And CIOs and CISOs have been sitting on the sidelines for a long time now. They really need to be mainstream, making some decisions, and being part of an executive board within the agencies.
It strikes me that that failure to execute the vision of Klinger-Cohen is the reason that CIOs sometimes get branded as the no person, because had they been integrated more into the policymaking and decision-making process early on, instead of coming along at the very end, it would give you an opportunity to say, instead of just say no at the end, it would give somebody like you a chance to say, well, if we did it this way, that could work, or if we went in a different direction or added some layer of security or whatever. You think that's the case?
I agree with you. If they were made part of the decision-making process, they could come up with alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of fighting for let me buy more computers or let me buy more networks, they could actually see the need of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the decisions we made quite a bit in my previous job was the fact that we wanted to expand the FBI's footprint overseas and versus spending in technology. So we had to reach a compromise, how much we could do in technology and how much we could invest on our agents being in the battlefield in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So if the CIO was purely focused on technology and not on the mission, they would always advocate, let's buy more computers.
Right.
But understanding the mission, they can always come up with a compromise, say, you know what, mission is important, let's do that. And by the way, if we have money, we're going to do X, Y, Z.
Zal Azmi's previous job was Chief Information Officer of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. His current job is Senior Vice President of CACI's Cyber Solutions Group. And we will be back to wrap up our conversation with Zal on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week, join host Bill Bransford as he meets with several niche federal employee associations to learn about their missions and discuss the top issues for their members.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 AM Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
If you think things between Russia and the U.S. are cozy, think again. Pentagon officials say two Russian aircraft buzzed a U.S. Navy warship in the Arctic's Barents Sea last week, each coming within about 50 yards of the frigate. Flying by Navy ships in close range in international waters is not unheard of, but this type of Cold War incident was enough to stir some concern. However, Navy personnel aboard the ship did not believe the actions were hostile. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine buying a television or vehicle today that you'll still be using in 40 years? Probably not. When the military purchase an airplane, they know it has to last at least that long or longer, and the parts for the airplane may already be obsolete. That's where Airink comes in. Airink helps the DoD plan ahead for parts obsolescence. This planning saves money and lessens the risk of counterfeit parts being used if the original supplier no longer exists. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
What will happen to your hard-earned wealth after you die? How do you protect your assets for your family? Will your heirs squander it away? Will creditors and predators try to take it away from your loved ones? At Zelle Law, our goal is to give you peace of mind in planning for your retirement and beyond by helping you construct the best life and estate plans customized to your needs. Find out what you need to know on Blueprint for Wealth. Join me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. right here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Openly exchange ideas and develop solutions for today's toughest technology challenges at the 20th Annual Executive Leadership Conference, October 24th through the 26th in Williamsburg, Virginia. ELC offers a government-driven, educational, and neutral forum where government and industry IT executives can contribute to actionable solutions in healthcare, sustainability, cybersecurity, and accountability. Register today at actgov.org/ELC2010. ELC, advancing the business of government.
Back to wrap up on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, my conversation with Zal Azmi of CACI. I appreciate your time to be here. It's always great to have you in the studio and talk about these issues and solve the problems of the world. I understand that you had a little bit of a challenge over the summer at home. And I hope that that turns out okay for you. You had a little bit of a run-in with a slip and slide.
Well, Francis, if I knew you were going to mention that on radio, I wouldn't have shared it with you. Here goes information sharing. Can't trust anyone.
That's right. Well, it's great to know that you're involved. Your kids are 2, 4, and 6.
Correct.
And it's great to know that you're involved with them and having fun with them over the summer. And I wish you a great fall, and I appreciate you coming in to talk about this report called Countering Challenges to the Global Supply Chain. We'll have it available later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. If you and I sit down, and I hope we do sit down and 6 months or so and continue this conversation, where do you see the trend line going when it comes to cybersecurity? What are the good things that are happening? So many times we hear these horror stories or things that make us think, oh, this will be something that this is something that can never be solved. What are the good things that are happening?
I think the good things are happening, and we need to acknowledge those because we are making progress. Mm-hmm. You know, Howard Schmidt being in the White House, he knows what his role is. He has a deputy that is very capable. Samir Balutra is very good at what he's doing. I think General Alexander heading the Cyber Command, great positive step. The commands, the four armed forces, elements of the armed forces, they're all standing up their Cyber Command, the 24th Air Force, the 10th Fleet, they're all the right steps in the right direction. Homeland Security knowing exactly what their roles and responsibilities are. I think these are all good examples of progress we're making. But again, I mean, this is an environment that has no bounds. Mm-hmm. Cyber is constantly changing, mm-hmm. and we need to remain agile and change with it as quickly as possible.
As those changes continue to happen, I will look forward to continuing our conversations. Zal Azmi, thank you very much for being here today.
Francis, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Happy to do it. Zal Azmi is the Senior Vice President of CACI's Cyber Solutions Group on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.